What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And welcome into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Marquise Mutson coming to you live this Tuesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Fellas, what's going on, Joe? How was your Monday afternoon?
Got there. We go. I haven't had a button issue in a while, and there we go. Let's start it. Let's start it right off with a button issue. I'm good, man. Everything's good. We're gonna get through two more days of crappy weather, and then we're gonna be downhill from there.
I'm really hoping so. We've had enough of the rain lately, although we got a good break from it last week into last weekend. So I'm kind of okay with it happening this morning. But I did look at the extended forecast. I am excited about 70s really throughout. When you look at, you get through the next two or three days here, we're looking pretty good. Munson, what did you do yesterday?
I chilled in the house, as I'm supposed to be doing. So as soon, I am taking this very seriously about staying in the house. So it's been a lot of video game play, a lot of 2K play going on in the household. So that's all I do. Just watch old games on TV and play 2K. That's about it.
I was so excited, and Munson, I'm sure you were too.
Yes, I already know where you're going.
Yes, you do. When I saw that ESPN was moving up the Michael Jordan documentary to April 19th, golly, I got so excited yesterday. It was almost like, you know, the NBA playoffs were starting on April 19th. That's how excited I was. I'm going to sit there. It's going to be just incredible. Everyone is going to watch that.
You could have told me Beyonce was in my living room, and that's probably the equal amount of excitement I had for that Jordan documentary. Like, that's when I heard that, I was like, oh, this is happening. This is the gif of this is happening. That was me. Like, I've been excited for that ever since. And I hate how they promoted it, because they were, like, promoting it, like, in January, like, December and January, showing, like, you know, all the interviews they did, showing the trailer for it, kind of like how a movie does, but it's like coming in June, and I'm like, oh, come on, you can't do that. Like, you can't show this like six seven months before and then say coming soon in June. Like, get out of here. But now it's coming, and then I knew once this happened, like, ESPN's gonna have to come up with content, which is, they're not hard to do, because I mean, they're showing the national championship game from last season, you know, tonight. So they're not stretching for content, but it's pretty good that something that's a lot of people want to see, that you push that up a little bit. So I'm happy that they finally just pulled the trigger on that and said, hey, we're going to finally let you guys watch this 10-part docuseries, and I love it.
Yeah, I mean,
I am too. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I was just going to say, so I assume it was probably what, just playing for right after the finals, right? Is that the idea?
Yeah, pretty much. That's what they were going to do.
Now it's a mid-season feature, hopefully.
Yeah, and, you know, for a lot of people that grew up and probably are younger than us, Marquise, and, you know, grow up and maybe you're born in the late 90s, early 2000s, this may be like the first time that they're like, really exposed to everything that was Michael Jordan with the Chicago Bulls, which is kind of crazy to think about. But I think a lot of people are going to look at this that are like, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old right now. And this may be like the first time they really get a full exposure to everything that was Michael Jordan during the 90s, during his time with the Bulls.
Yeah, I mean, I watched for me, like I said yesterday, I watch a lot of documentaries. So, like, I watched the documentary about how Nike started and how that kind of got famous. So, obviously, a part of that was Jordan, and that was implemented in that documentary. So, I got that piece of it. And then, obviously, I watched documentaries on him going to play baseball, because he played for the Birmingham Bruins, and got to watch that part of it. So I've watched, like, small documentaries and spurts that had something to do with Jordan's career, but sure, never did it primarily focus on Jordan's career. And then he also had a biopic back in the day, too, that I watched. And it was awful acting in that movie, by the way. I can't remember who was in it, but I remember there was a Jordan biopic, and I got to look up and see who was in that movie. But I watched that, and so I got a little glimpse of it then. But, yeah, that it's fun to finally get to see from people that got to share his life perspective. Like, Phil Jackson's in it, and all these former players, and it's just it's going to be awesome.
So are you suggesting that Jordan hasn't had enough attention? Is that what I'm hearing from you, Marquise? Michael Jordan just hasn't had quite enough press.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely not. Not enough. But I think from his words, from his own words, and from the words of, like, Phil Jackson, who, I mean, he talks about Jordan, but you got to read his book, and I'm not buying his book. I'm not buying Phil Jackson's book because he was just trashing all his former players in that book. So I'm good on that. So it's good to get his perspective, and it's a 10-part series, and it's going to be awesome.
As someone who grew up hating Michael Jordan, I'll still watch the thing. And I will watch it critically and hope that it is a factual and not propaganda based documentary.
I thought Joe, when once he heard the news that we were going to talk about like Michael Jordan's documentary, he was going to be like, oh, I don't want to talk about this.
Yeah, I'm leaving.
Yeah, I'm leaving.
I'm interested to watch it. You know, it's just hey, sports fandom, man. You grow up. You know, as a Detroit Pistons fan, you're not going to like Michael Jordan very much, and I didn't. And, you know, I'm still mad about the Dream Team and Isaiah not being on it in 92, but that's okay. We'll get over it.
So
yeah, we'll Jordan's, get over it another 10 years.
Jordan's biopic was Michael Jordan, an American Hero, and it came out in 1999. There's not a lot of people that people would recognize. Robin Givens, who was married to Mike Tyson, obviously.
Yeah.
She was in that movie. She played his wife in that movie. So, and then Michael Jace played Michael Jordan, which I don't know who that is. So that was the I didn't know who any of these people were, but it was good. It was a good biopic for you know a 1999 biopic about Michael Jordan, because you really can't like fit all his life in just one movie. No. And that's why this, like, same thing with the OJ like documentary that we talk about, like, you could not fit that in just like a movie or something, like, or one documentary. So they had to make it a 2-hour, 5-part series that end up winning an Oscar. So
that's incredible. Happened. That's an incredible piece of work right there. That's one of the best documentaries I've ever seen. I doubt the Jordan documentary will approach it, but we'll see.
Joe, if the Jordan documentary spends significant time on the movie Space Jam, will you stop watching?
Yeah, if there's like one episode just on Space Jam, I'll probably skip over that one. Although, I mean, hey, I've never watched Space Jam, so maybe it would be a chance to learn about it. But, yeah, it's I mean, you mentioned the biopic, Marquis. So that came out like when he was playing with the Wizards then?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I totally missed that. Now, I'm sure this will be really good. 10 parts, though? Man, do we need 10 parts?
Yes, we do.
I mean, I know Jordan's.
Yeah. Because you got to do. Because I'm pretty sure they probably broke it down. It's probably going to be early life Jordan, obviously. North Carolina Jordan. Then when he first got drafted and when he went to play basketball, him becoming this global figure with Nike and with Air Jordans and all that. And you know, his Wizards career, hopefully they focus a lot on that.
See, like,
I would love to see that.
Like, I'm thinking 6 parts right now, you know? Like, I feel like they could have gotten it done in 6, but we'll see.
But it's probably
I don't want to be a Debbie Downer.
Yeah, you are. You're already being a Debbie Downer. But it's probably broken into hours. Like, it's probably not like the OJ. Like, the OJ documentary could have easily been 10-part series, but they broke it down. It was 5 parts and 2-hour episodes. So maybe it's just the opposite of that. Maybe it's just hour episodes and it's, you know, 10 parts.
Right now, I would take a 25-part documentary series on Michael Jordan just to space this thing out. It'd give me something to look forward to for like the next month, month and a half. I mean, I would take as long as they want to go.
Yeah.
No, who would be another athlete that we need to have like a very in-depth documentary series on?
Oh, it's going to happen with LeBron one day. That's for sure. And I am all about it. There'll be the decision in it, you know, the Miami time, going back to Cleveland. Like, LeBron's going to have a big time documentary series one day. And who knows, he may already be recording. Like, Dwayne Wade, he came out with that documentary on ESPN a couple months ago and has basically been recording for a long time. Like, a lot of these moments that happened in his career, him and LeBron are very close. I would not be surprised if, like, a LeBron James documentary was already in the works and we just don't know about it.
Yeah, I'm sure those will happen. Like, you know, look, there's a lot of great athletes who could have one. I guess to me, it's like someone who has a unique story would be. I mean, honestly, like, okay, let's think locally. Who locally could be the good a good subject of a documentary?
Mookie Betts.
Mookie Betts would be a good one.
I just threw that out there because, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Mookie Betts.
He loves
Betts,
him, some Mookie Betts.
Yes, especially now. Like Tim Shaw, you know, of the Titans. Yeah. I mean, there's someone who, you know, it's an unbelievable story, really.
Maybe McNair. Maybe Steve and Eddie.
Yeah, did you guys listen to the podcast on the SI podcast?
I did.
Yeah.
I mean, which is obviously, it was sort of like a. I mean, it was sort of a half, you know, about McNair, but it was really like a true crime kind of podcast. And I know a lot of people who've been here a long time kind of dismiss a lot of the theories there, but I still thought it was interesting. I mean, for me, I learned a lot just even about him and his time here. And I know there's some stuff in there that people don't like, but I still thought it was interesting. But yeah, I mean, Steve McNair, obviously, when you talk about the life, the career, and then obviously the tragic ending. I mean, that's something that could be a good documentary.
Pac-Man Jones, just his time here in Nashville. And to be honest with you, like, when he was drafted and, like, everything that happened here with the Titans and, you know, the legal stuff that was going on, the problems he was having in the locker room, like, if you would have told me he would have played in the NFL as long as he ended up playing in the NFL – at the time, I would have told you were nuts.
Yeah.
But Pac-Man Jones, he actually made a pretty good career for himself.
Well, he was an unbelievable talent.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I mean, like, if Pac-Man Jones, like, didn't have all the other stuff, I think he could have been a great, great player in the NFL. You're right. I mean, the fact that he carved out the career he did, well, given everything around him, man, I mean, that speaks right there to a pretty special, you know, talent.
I will say this one. I'll throw this one out here. And this would probably be really interesting, Mike Tyson.
Oh, yeah.
Not locally, but, you know, Mike Tyson just, that would be amazing. Now,
isn't there some kind of doc on him?
There's a documentary. There's a documentary called Tyson that's on Netflix. So if you guys need your sports fix, like, there you go.
You've seen it?
Yes, it's amazing. It's great. But it went into detail. You know how, like, when you try to squeeze everything in one documentary, like, I remember Tupac had a documentary that was really good, got nominated for an Oscar. It's called Tupac Resurrection. And it was just, everything, like, when it's done in, like, one movie in one part, they try to sprinkle stuff in very quick and skip over a lot. So that's why I think you can, like, easily with Tupac and easily with Mike Tyson, you can separate some stuff and kind of go more in-depth in certain things than instead of, like, just flashing by it and then it just moves on.
So you want 10-parters on everybody.
Nah.
At this point, we've got time.
Yeah,
I think Jordan is a unique, like, figure to do. You can't just do 10-part series on it. Like, I would not want to, you know, see a 10-part series on, like, Ilgauskas or something.
Speak you know, for yourself. Like,
or you die.
Barajal, that'd be fun. You
know, Anderson Barajal. Like, no, Damon Jones.
Sideshow Bob Hare.
I don't want to see, like, 10-part series on people, like, you know, no offense to those guys. Like, those guys, I'm pretty sure they got very unique stories on how they got to the NBA, but would not want to see a 10-part series.
When we come back, the NCAA has granted some extra eligibility for spring sports. We'll react to that and what that means as they move forward with their spring sports in the coming years. That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rextro here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rextro from The Athletic. Floyd Reese will join us at 6:30. Looking forward to that, like we do each and every Tuesday at 6:30. Joe, yesterday the NCAA came out and announced that it will allow Division I spring sports student athletes whose seasons were canceled because of the coronavirus to have the opportunity to have an extra year of eligibility. And I don't think this was a huge surprise in terms of the vote and that being approved, just because spring sports were shut down and canceled this season. We all know why, because the coronavirus and everything going on there, and locally it's impacted several spring sports, probably the most notable of which is Vanderbilt baseball in their pursuit of defending their national championship. probably the biggest sticking point, Joe, from what came out yesterday was that the winter sport athletes like basketball are not going to be given the same opportunity as the spring sports. And look, it's a little bit different of a situation. I mean, the winter sports did get to play in the case of basketball and of college hockey as well. They were in the conference tournaments when the NCAA made the decision to suspend the tournaments and ultimately cancel the NCAA tournaments involved with those particular sports as well. So I didn't really expect the winter sports to be given the same opportunity. Does it stink? Yes, I get it. It does. If you're a senior, especially, like you're going to play in the NCAA tournament, maybe you have an opportunity to close out your career and win a national championship. You're not going to get that opportunity now. But I think really with the spring sports, it was the only move the NCAA had to make. I mean, I'm glad that they have put this on the table and these student athletes will be given an extra year of eligibility if they choose to do so.
Yeah, well, it's also if the schools choose. And I think this was the only way to do it. And we're going to have Belmont Athletic Director Scott Corley on later, and it'll be interesting to hear what he has to say about this. But this, I think this, I'm not surprised this happened. Like, you're right, Robbie. I mean, it stinks for the winter athletes, but the bottom line is, you know, they some of them did finish their seasons, and you know, they all got close, and it stinks to have, you know, the postseason taken away like that. But it would have been way too convoluted to try to open up to them. And the biggest thing here is money. I mean, right now, you know, decisions are being made thinking about football. I mean, I'm still optimistic about football happening, and maybe I'm naive, but you know, I think I want to see what things look like in a month, you know, and in a month, you know, I think if things are going as I think they'll go, you know, I think that'll be a little bit brighter outlook. But still, we don't know, and these administrators don't know, and so if you mess with that at all, you've already taken a big chunk out of your budget because of the NCAA tournament. Okay,
oh, yeah.
Now if you think about football being lost, I mean it's a strain. Okay, and so the winter athletes, like, that was, I think, always kind of a pipe dream. The spring athletes, the key here, of course, is that this is going to be up to the schools. Now, there's a blanket waiver. So for anybody out there who you know, isn't familiar with this, so this isn't just seniors. This is everyone gets another year of eligibility.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, sophomores get everybody gets another year of eligibility. Now, the question is financial aid, and I think this had to be this way. It wasn't like across the board, you know, they will get the same scholarship. It is going to be up to the schools in terms of the financial aid. And as people know, I mean, we think about football and basketball full scholarships, but most sports are not full scholarships. They are partial scholarships. You know, baseball teams, what is it, 11.7, I believe?
Yeah.
Is that the scholarship allotment for a team? So, you know, so now it's going to be really interesting. How many, you know, seniors want to come back? And then how many schools are going to say, okay, yeah, and we'll give you the same financial aid? They don't have to now. So I think in a lot of cases you're going to – I mean, I think largely you're going to see seniors moving on. But you probably will see – you certainly you'll see some cases of, you know, a senior who really, you know, wanted to have this last year of college athletics come back for it, and then, you know, it'll be on the schools to figure it out. And I'm telling you, I mean, everyone needs football to exist for, you know, for those decisions to go in the favor of the athletes.
They do. And to your point, Joe, it says, you know, in 2020, schools will have the option to offer the same or a lower amount of aid to a student athlete that they received last year, including dropping the aid to zero. So I'm interested to see, and obviously, like, some of this is going to depend on different schools and the situations that they're in, but like how many decisions are made just completely drop the aid to zero if the athletes take advantage of this extra year of eligibility. Some schools, I think, will be able to handle this a little bit better than others, but certainly that part of it will be very interesting to watch how that takes place if these student athletes fill out these waivers and want to come back and have an extra year of eligibility.
Yeah, and I think it'll also, you know, individual circumstances. I mean, there's, you know, there's going to be, a softball player out there whose family has money, you know, and says, hey, that's fine. You take me off scholarship. I want to play this last year. We can afford it. Let's go. You know, that'll happen with some. Now, there is also, and this is from, you know, my colleague Nicole Auerbach was covering this yesterday, and I didn't realize this. It's interesting, but there is an NCAA Student Assistance Fund, okay, to pay for scholarships that are using the extra year next year. Schools will be able to use that. Now, the problem is there's no number on that right now. You know, the cuts to the revenue distribution already have obviously strapped it. And then again, like next year, the amount of money in that fund, I'm guessing, will be quite tied to what happens with football. And it's another, like, anytime you look at college athletics right now, you know, Robbie, and from any angle, if you really look at how it operates and what has already happened with the NCAA tournament, that's the more I'm convinced that even if it's with empty stadiums, there's going to be football inventory next year for television revenue. Every possible avenue will be exhausted if it comes to that, if it still comes to having to have empty stadiums in the fall to have football, because it is you're talking about severe impact if that does not exist.
No question about it. And specifically for the spring sports, the ones that are affected: softball, men's and women's golf, tennis, track and field, lacrosse, and volleyball, and of course baseball as well. The other part of this, Joe, scholarship limitations have been lifted, allowing these schools basically to carry more players on a roster than they previously were allowed to do. I think that also a lot of people were wondering, like, okay, if you do this with the spring sports and you allow these athletes to come back, like, what are the scholarship limitations going to be at that point? How are you going to handle it from a roster standpoint? So it looks like the NCAA made the decision yesterday as well to lift some of those scholarship limitations and allow these rosters and these sports to carry more players than they otherwise would be allowed to do in a normal year.
Yeah. And so, of course, if you're like a Mississippi State baseball fan, you're just like, well, whatever, Vanderbilt just has full scholarships for anybody, everybody, right? It's not true.
No, it's not.
But, you know, like, Vanderbilt baseball is an interesting case. I mean, like, it stinks. You know, if you like Vanderbilt baseball, like Austin Martin, you know, he's going to be in the majors next year. I mean, this was a chance to watch him have one more year at Vanderbilt, just an incredible talent. And, you know, there's a lot of guys who are moving on, like a program like that, like a lot of guys have a chance to play professional baseball. But there may be, you know, maybe a couple who decide to reboot and have a senior year. You know, Tennessee baseball was, I think, going to have – I mean, Tennessee Vanderbilt, I was really excited about some of those games. Tennessee baseball really coming on and some really good talent there. So maybe, you know, maybe this impacts them next year too with you know, a little bit different roster than they would have had.
And like also like from a Vanderbilt perspective, it takes away another year locally of watching Kumar Rocker. I love watching Kumar Rocker pitch, and you know, I'm not a Vandy fan, but I enjoy, you know, Vanderbilt's baseball program and what Tim Corbin has put together over there. And watching Kumar Rocker, like, he's going to be the first pick in the draft whenever he decides to leave. And you know, I think he was going to be around for another 2 years.
Yeah.
Well, now that's just one. He'll be back for one more year, and then he's likely going to be the first pick in the draft after that.
Well, and Jack Leiter will be eligible to be drafted. And Jack Leiter, freshman, Al Leiter's kid, was looking incredible already this year. So next year for Vanderbilt baseball, probably those two guys – I mean, I know they both should be on the team, and they both, I think, will go very high in the draft. So at least – with those two, you know, you get to watch them next season. You know, I mean, well, we assume.
Yeah.
I think we'll be okay a year from now.
Man, I hope so. I hope that we're in a much better place.
I mean, come on.
A year from now. I can't take much more of this, much less for another year, Joe. You have to save me.
Yeah. I'm sorry I even brought it up.
When we come back, former Titans general manager and co-host of Jared and the GM, Floyd Reese, will join us. We'll get his approach on how he would handle this year's draft and the different format it's going to take place in the NFL. That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode taking you through this Tuesday morning in rainy Nashville, Tennessee. And it's that time of the week we bring in our good friend Floyd Reese, former Titans general manager and host of Jared and the GM and on the afternoons here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Floyd, what's going on, my man?
You know, just trying to stay dry.
Yeah, all of us. We got a little break from it last week for like 4 or 5 days in a row of like sunshine. I didn't really know what to do with myself.
That's right.
So, Floyd, we were kind of talking about, you know, this year's draft, obviously, in the NFL is going to be very different. It's scheduled to take place on April 23rd through the 25th, but not in Las Vegas, as was originally planned. If you're an NFL general manager right now and you're kind of planning to go through this draft process off-site, kind of remotely, in a much different setup than we're used to having, what's kind of your approach? How would you approach this draft specifically if you're a general manager in today's NFL?
You know, it's going to be different. I don't think there's any doubt about that. We don't know exactly how much. We know that, you're going to be in a unique setting. You're going to have to virtually try to take a draft room and move it to wherever it is you're going, and to be able to carry on the draft with a limited number of people. When they first started talking about this, I envisioned them trying to make you carry on the draft with each guy in his own individual home or office or wherever it may be. And that really bothered me. I mean, I knew that would be really, really tough. Being that they're going to let you have a limited number of people in your area, wherever that is, makes it much, much better. So you can have, you can have your head coach, or you can have your director of player personnel, or you can have a scout or two, or whatever it is you think you need to carry on the draft in a different location. And, having been through this a little bit when we relocated to Nashville and we're trying to carry on the draft in a set of trailers, you always are concerned about the unexpected, which, in our case was a thunderstorm. And all of a sudden the power goes out and you decide you're going to locate in a big, nice hotel someplace, and have an area all set off for you and isolated and whatever else. Well, if the power goes off in that hotel, I mean, where are you then? Now you're like we were on cell phones trying to take care of a draft. So, you always worry about crazy things like that you don't, you anticipate them, but the chances are very, very small until they happen to you.
Yeah, it makes me think about, for your career, Floyd, from the time you switched from coaching to personnel with the Oilers through your time as a GM, how much did the draft rooms change? I mean, was it basically the same every year, or did you see that evolve over those years?
Oh, no, it's evolved, and it's really come into something that's pretty sophisticated. I can remember the first couple of draft rooms I was in, and having a room set off, but, on the wall you would have maybe, 50 names and limited area and limited number of people. And the reasons that you made decisions were far different. And I think that, it's evolved to the point now where, the inside of the draft rooms are all digital and you can literally change names or change positions or eliminate cards or add cards at the drop of a hat. You push a button, boom, the whole wall changes. So there are a lot of things that they've done that have really, really helped and gotten you to the point that, we've said before, this is far from a science. This is kind of a educated dice game. And you're trying to make the best decisions you can, when you roll the seven and it's your turn. And yet we know that from the number of mistakes that are made, that it's a ways away from a science.
former Titans general manager and host of Jared and the GM, Floyd Reese, on the line with us. Floyd, obviously a lot's happened so far with the Titans this offseason. Maybe a lot still to happen in free agency. You know, Logan Ryan's still out there. Clowney's still out there. Conklin gone. Jarrell Casey gone. So we understand there's still more pieces to this puzzle. But right now, how would you approach the 29th overall pick as the roster stands today?
You know, it's going to – when you're picking at 29, you always go in and you say to yourself, okay, I would love to be able to pluck this guy or this position. And yet at 29, you know the chances of that are not really high. And so what you do, you know, I always felt like when we were drafting that far down that you go in there and you're almost forced into taking the best player, whoever that best player is. I'm a believer in, you know, if you don't take the best player, the 29th best player, whoever that may be, if you don't take that guy and you say, okay, I need a, you know, rush guy, and you go ahead and pick a guy that's at 39 or 49, well, what's happened is not only have you lessened the value of your spot, but now there are another 10 or however many guys, you know, that you just passed that you're going to have to play against that are, according to your board, all better than the guy you drafted. And so in the long run, if you make a living out of trying to do that, pretty soon your roster is not up to par with those teams that, you know, that were able to pluck the better players. So you're almost forced into saying, okay, whoever the best guy is, short of a quarterback, you know, you say, I've got to take him, whether it's a guard or a safety or, you know, whatever it is, maybe not a need, but it's, you know, by far the best player. That's the way you go.
And obviously, Floyd, there's a, you know, a long way to go here. There are signings to come and, of course, draft picks to come. But at this point, I mean, are you concerned about the, you know, the upfront situation on defense with Casey gone and now Austin Johnson gone?
I am from a depth standpoint. You know, I think we have to feel pretty good about the guys that are there. Now you worry about, you know, the part that always gets you when you lose a quality player. And let's take the right tackle, for example, in our situation. You know, God forbid, last year, if Jack went down, well, Kelly would jump in there. And you felt good about that. You know, he's not Jack, but he's still a solid guy. Well, if you don't make adjustments, then this year Kelly's a starting right tackle. And now if Kelly goes down, you're to your fourth tackle now. You know, instead of saying, okay, my backup is fine. Well, you're saying, yeah, my backup is fine, but what about the fourth guy? And I think the value of the position and the quality of the position drops off dramatically. So you have to worry about that, and I think that's what they probably have to worry about, you know, on the defensive front. You know, you think, okay, Simmons is going to be in there, and he's going to be great. Well, God forbid he pulls a hamstring and misses a week and a half or 2 weeks. Now who's the backup, you know? And if that guy goes down, well, who's the guy behind him? And so the depth really drops off dramatically and really has an impact on your success.
Floyd, yesterday here at ESPN 102.5 The Game, we came out with the Nashville's Best Sports Bracket involving some athletes over the last 30 years, and 2-1 seeds in the bracket were Steve McNair and Eddie George. I think a lot of Titans fans have known how special of players those two specifically were. You were around those guys. What about their leadership kind of separated Steve McNair and Eddie George from the rest of the pack?
Yeah, I mean, they were special guys, and special in different ways. You know, their personalities and the way they did things was not the same, and yet they got done what they both needed to do, and everybody saw it. You know, Eddie was, I mean, just a work crazy, you know, do it all on a meticulous routine, and, you know, he lifted weights the same time every week, and you know, all the things that go into that. McNair was, you know, a little bit more easygoing. You know, before the game, it was nothing, and he did it about every game. He'd find a little quiet spot someplace, curl up, and have a nap. and everybody else is getting themselves ready. Yet when they went on the field, when it came time to performing, you were talking about the same guy. They just got there a little bit different. So I always thought it was healthy from our standpoint, because it gave the locker room a little bit of a unique character. You know, everybody in the locker room understood who these guys were. And there were some guys that would, you know, look at Steve and say, okay, I can do that, and feel good about it. And then the other guys, you know, wanted that routine that Eddie was on all the time. So, you know, I thought it was, they, even though they were different, I thought it gave us a little bit of, I don't know, something that the guys could talk about. Different guys could follow, you know, one or the other, and still end up in the place you wanted, which was, when it came to Sunday, they were ready to play and ready to play pretty well.
Yeah, we're going to get into this, you know, Nashville sports bracket, of course, Florida. Do you? I don't know if you've been able to look at it. If you have any, you know, you have any beefs anyone that you thought should have been on here, or any seeding issues. I mean, we're gonna be dissecting this.
Yeah, and I really haven't studied it. We talked about it yesterday for a minute. You know, I think as we get into this a little bit, you know, we'll probably all jump into that a lot more. I think it's going to be fun. I think it's a good idea. You know, it's never quite the way you want it. You know, you can, because you see guys differently, you've worked with them, you know who they are, what they are, and in your mind, you'd say, oh, no, those guys have to flip, or how do you even compare those two? And yet, I think when it's all said and done, it'll all work out, and it's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be great fun.
Former Titans GM and host of Jared and the GM in the Afternoons, Floyd Reese, has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Floyd, thanks as always, man, for joining us, and have a good rest of your day. We'll see you at 2 o'clock.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you later. Floyd.
Absolutely. Joe, when we come back, I want to get into a little bit of what Floyd talked about right there in terms of the NFL draft and how general managers should approach it and teams should approach it this year in what's going to be a much different draft situation than normal. That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Dan Orlovsky yesterday on Golic and Wingo talking about the draft process for NFL general managers. It's going to be very different this year, Joe, as we know, in terms of the NFL draft originally scheduled to take place in Las Vegas. Obviously, that's not going to happen. Given the coronavirus and everything going around, it's going to be done remotely. Some limited team personnel will be allowed to gather together as they go through the draft, kind of on a different process remotely, and don't have their team facilities, everybody around them like they're used to having throughout this process. And Joe, we talked about it a little bit last week. Like, you know, if you're an NFL general manager, you've already gone through the combine, you've interviewed a lot of these players that are on your board. Like, at the end of the day, you should be able to operate and should be able to execute this NFL draft from a normal standpoint. And, you know, the circumstances are different. I get that. But like Dan Orlovsky said there, part of your job as an NFL general manager is to be able to adapt and be able to adjust when things like this that are unforeseen happen. You ask your players to do it. That's part of what your job is, too, as an NFL general manager. Quite frankly, you know, with technology as readily available as it is, I don't anticipate this being a huge obstacle for NFL teams to overcome.
Yeah, and I agree. I liked Dan Orlovsky's comments there, and I pretty much reject every angle of dispute on this. You know, I think the idea that the NFL, you know, shouldn't be doing this at this time in our, you know, what's going on in the country, I reject that out of hand. I think we need this. Well, I'll take it all day. I don't think there's any tone deafness to having a draft. As far as, you know, the process of going through this, of course it's different. But as long as it's not an uneven playing field, as long as someone doesn't have an edge on someone else in terms of, you know, the process of getting ready for the draft, then let it go. And again, there's no, you could sit here and say, well, we'll postpone it, but postpone it to when? When do we know that you're going to have normalcy and be able to do all the things that you want? You're still not, I mean, you're going to postpone it and then you think you're going to have all your normal visits and everything before the draft. So how far are we pushing it back? Till Christmas? I mean, you know, it's just, this is how it is. I think it'll be fine. It's a little bit of a challenge. You know, we're going to get John Robinson and Mike Vrabel for media having a teleconference tomorrow. And I think what you'll hear from John Robinson is, all right, let's go. You know, I know that some GMs are angry. I almost wonder if it's the GMs who are going to be exposed here because they're not as good at, you know, evaluating players in this way as others that are the ones that are upset, or if people just want to be upset at Roger Goodell. And they should be upset at his stupid thing he said in the press release. I mean, he had to do something ridiculous, yes. And he did. You know, this whole, like, you know, you better not say a critical word thing. But still, the actual draft and everything that's happening, I mean, everything's going to be fine. It'll work out.
And Dan Orlovsky – also, we mentioned he joined Golic and Wingo yesterday talking about, like, the general manager's approach to it. Here it would be how Dan Orlovsky approaches the NFL draft right now if he were an NFL general manager.
What did our draft board say about players in December? And we're going to rely on that more than what it says about what we've acquired over the last 3 months in March. Because a lot of guys become better football players in the eyes of people January through March rather than what their tape shows. So let's just go watch them be football players. And what did it look like in December? We're gonna build our draft off of that. Number two, I want to rely on the people that I pay to go tour the country throughout the fall and do their evaluations and do their scouting reports and do their interviews and spend all my time with those guys, and let's gather our database there. Number three, what did we learn about guys or not learn about guys at the combine? You know, like, so there's still plenty of information for teams to make their draft selections off of. So I'm relying 99% on that.
So Dan Orlovsky talking about, you know, kind of the approach from general managers there to the draft. And Joe, this fascinates me because a lot of times I think, you know, it's not like we've missed any football here. Like, we haven't missed anything. The game tape for these prospects is right there. It's readily available to you. You've sent scouts out in the fall to talk to these players, to look at these players, to be around them, get the feel for what kind of a pro they could be, how their game translates from the college level to the NFL level. So I look at this, and sometimes, you know, you hear some of the excuses being thrown out there that, you know, they're not getting a chance to really get around these guys and interview them. You can't do them in person. Like, there's all these different things, even though the combine has already taken place and a lot of those things did happen and did take place. Like, the excuses that have been thrown out there, at the end of the day, like, the most important element to evaluating these kids in the draft and these players is the game film. And there has been no game film from a college football standpoint that has been missed because of the coronavirus. So, yeah, do you acquire new information at the combine, and maybe it's some pro days that could be useful to you in the draft process? Sure. I mean, you absolutely do. But at the end of the day, sometimes I think these teams really overcomplicate things and don't let the game field do most of the talking. That, to me, this year as an NFL general manager would be more important than ever before.
Yeah, I mean, if the Chicago Bears just would have relied on game film, I mean, Mitch Trubisky became this mythical, unbelievable talent after the season, you know? If you just went on, like, watching the football, you would have taken Deshaun Watson. So there's a lot that happens every year. And listen, I do agree. I understand the idea of you're investing in people and you really want to have, you know, the right kind of people and the right personalities and all that stuff. And I think those visits are valuable and beyond the combine. But you're right. You still had the combine. You still were able to talk to a lot of people. I mean, I know, you know, having, you know, a couple of years ago wrote something about, like, what John Robinson does in these visits and stuff. And I mean, they're very important to him. And I think to a lot of GMs in terms of really sitting down with someone, you know, face-to-face, kind of throws some tough questions at them and sees how they react to things and stuff like that. Like, I get that that's valuable, especially when you are really focused on intangibles, you know, building a team. But listen, you're right. The bottom line is the game film. And every GM will tell you that there's game film that lies, but I think that game film has still got to be more reliable than anything else and more reliable than how a guy runs or tests or things like that. I mean, you got to be able to, you know, to reach certain standards of those tests, obviously. And there's some, you know, there's some cutoffs where, like, okay, you know, this scares me off. You know, Juwan Jennings, we've talked about him before. Obviously, that's a guy who didn't help himself with how he ran in Indy. You know, here and there, that'll impact how a guy's perceived. But the game film is still it. And maybe, who knows, maybe this will make for more accurate drafting and, you know, change the way people think about this whole process.
And another part of this conversation is, you know, the technology that's available to these NFL teams to be able to conduct a draft like this. And you have to be able to get used to properly using your video, take advantage of these technologies. You know, I don't know about you, Joe, but I've done a lot of Zoom conference calls with some of my work. I mean, that's all part of how all of us are adapting to the situation we're in right now. Ian Rapoport of the NFL Network talked about the NFL teams getting used to properly using video throughout this whole process. Here's what Ian Rapoport had to say.
World, we all NFL teams all have to figure out how to use Zoom, how to properly use FaceTime, and what are the rules. So here's an example of how a team and how a prospect are adjusting. Justin Herbert, the Oregon quarterback, one of the top quarterbacks in this coming draft, spent today on a FaceTime call with the Las Vegas Raiders. This is an interesting one, of course, because they have Derek Carr, but they are very much going to be in the quarterback mix, at least as far as exploring potential options. Herbert also had a FaceTime call previously with the Los Angeles Chargers. Now, as far as the rules, there could be no more than 3 FaceTime calls per week per prospect for a team. It also can't last more than an hour, and it can't interfere with schoolwork. But everything else is fair game, and this is the new reality for teams, Andrew.
Las Vegas Raiders, Joe, just blowing up Justin Herbert's phone. That's what's going on in NFL offices this week. You're talking to prospects. You've got Zoom conference calls going on, FaceTimes, just like the rest of us that are sitting at home social distancing. These are the guidelines right now that the NFL's having to operate under.
Bring in all the ducks to Las Vegas. You know, one thing that was hilarious there about what Rapoport said is the interfere with schoolwork. I mean, I cannot recall the last time a guy who was getting ready for the NFL draft was still taking classes during that semester. Almost doesn't happen at all anymore. I'm sure there are some exceptions, but for the most part, if you are trying to be drafted, even if you aren't done with your degree, you are not in school this semester anyway.
Yeah, I mean, and if you are in school, like, how much is your focus really there? Well, that's not a good thing, and I get that, but you're probably more concerned about your NFL future at this point if you're in that situation.
Sorry, I got to FaceTime with Gruden. I got to step out of class here.
I'll be right
back. There's no class to step out of.
Yeah, I got to step out of this Zoom call. I'll be right back. I'm taking another Zoom call from John Gruden. When we come back, we released the Nashville Best Sports Bracket yesterday here at ESPN 102.5 The Game. And now that we know what it looks like, what the seeding is, what do we make of it? We'll break it down region by region in the 7 o'clock hour. That's coming up next. But first, rocknashville.com is your community resource page brought to you by 102.5 The Game and Cromwell Media. Even though we're holed up in our own homes, we'll get through this like we do everything else together. Go to rocknashville.com to support local businesses who are supporting you. We'll be right back. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here. And you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.